This podcast is a production of The Orchard, a church community located in Aurora, Illinois, whose mission is leading people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. Visit us online at orchardvalleyonline.com.
I'm curious, how many of you went to high school during the 80s? Let's just see those hands. I want to see the 80s children there, all right? Not bad. I went to the high school during the 70s. I like your music better, all right? I was born a few years too early on that. You know, this morning, I picked the U2 song, Pride, which is the title, but it's often nicknamed In the Name of Love, because of this concept of legacy. Two reasons. One's the legacy of Martin Luther King that the song's about, is when U2 was in Chicago 20 years ago at the memorial. And it touched Bono to think of somebody that he could look to as a mentor of making a difference. Fascinating that that difference lives on today with his movements of removing debt all across the world in third world countries and working with AIDS. And in this understanding of legacy, take a look at a couple of minutes of the life of Martin Luther King and his story.
In Memphis, Tennessee, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., America's leading campaigner for civil rights, arrives to lend his support to a local strike. In less than 24 hours, he will be dead.
Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. And I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will.
I have a dream. That one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream. I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
In response, the following month, a bomb in Birmingham, Alabama, killed four little girls at a Baptist Sunday school. Dr. King returned in sorrow. The next evening, at 6:01, came the shot on the balcony. A rifle bullet struck him on the right side of his jaw, penetrating his neck and severing his spinal cord. His wife Coretta was brave and dignified at his funeral in Atlanta. In his last brooding days, he had preached about death and his funeral. He had said, "Tell them not to mention I have a Nobel Peace Prize or 300 or 400 other awards. That's not important. I want you to say that I tried to love and serve humanity. If you want to say that I was a drum major, say that I was a drum major for righteousness."
What causes you to get outside of the bubble of just the way life seems to consume us? And we get like the whole focus in and we rarely put the periscope up out of the water, out of our contained little bubble to see the needs of each other, the needs of those around us. One of the things that helps me to get the periscope up is to ponder the brevity of life, to realize how short life really is. Matter of fact, God comments that in Psalms, "Show me, O Lord, my life and the number of my days. Let me know how fleeting is my life. You've made my days a mere handbreadth. The span of my years is as nothing before you. Each man's life is but a breath. Man is a mere phantom as he goes to and fro. He bustles about, but only in vain. He heaps up wealth, not knowing who will get it. Or this look in Psalms, 70 years are given to us, some will get 80. Teach us to make the most of our time so we may grow in wisdom. One thing about life is we don't take the stuff of this life with us, but the relationships, that lasts. So one of the things I guess I have to ask you is, what do you want on your tombstone? What's going to be the thing that we remember you by? What's the thing that's going to be your legacy? That why you get up in the morning and you look back and say, yes, a life well lived, not just a life consumed with me. What will that be? Well, here's some real life tombstone inscriptions. Number one, it was a cough that carried him off. It was a coffin they carried him in. That was this man's legacy. Or how about this one? He was an attorney. Johnny Gumbel, 67 to 46, the defense rests. All right? Or here's an auctioneer. I love this. Jedediah Goodwin, born 1828, going, gone, you know? Or, man, this is the American way on a tombstone. Here you go. Here lies Jane Smith, wife of Thomas Smith, marble cutter. This monument erected by her husband is a tribute to her memory. Monuments of this style are $250. What will be your legacy? I love this. No name on this, was just he called Bill a liar. All right? Or this in a Tennessee graveyard. Here lies an atheist, John Doe, all dressed up, no place to go. You know, one of the legacies that's being built as we look at the song we had today is, you know, Bono being nominated with Bill Gates, you know, Man of the Year. He's building this legacy, this pattern of saying we've got to do more with our life than just consume it. What's your legacy? Well, Martin Luther King's tombstone reads like this: free at last, free at last. Thank the Lord Almighty, I am free at last. How do we live with the end in mind in such a way as it actually affects our summer 2007? Our fall 2007, how we raise our children, how we care for each other, how we care up to our parents, how we look out the window to our neighbors. And we're going to look this morning in Romans 12 at incredible invitation God gives us from his word about being transformed. And we're going to wait to the very end to show you the big drum roll ta-da of where the source of that's going to come from for you. But just to see what he's looking for, here's some of Romans chapter 12. I picked up starting in verse 9. Look at what God expects a transformed person in our culture to look like. Don't just pretend to love others. Really love them. Hate what's wrong. Hold tightly to what's good. Love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. You see, when we wake up every day, these little pieces are our legacy. Our legacy is living out God's will, the way God touches us with the people we see every day. That includes at work, includes at home, especially at home, includes the community we have here, includes our neighborhoods. What does God need to do to get us to see beyond us? Well, here's another one. It affects your workplace. Never be lazy, but work hard and serve the Lord enthusiastically. Entheoastically means with God energy, show up at work. That's part of what a transformed person does. We have one of our volunteer youth leaders retired from his job. And one of the fun parts was he had to go back after 18 months of retirement because nobody else could run the machines like he could. And they had to pay him a lot of money to have him come back and keep training people to get the machines to work, to make Dial soap. And when he went back, he didn't want to go back. He loved being retired, investing in students. So we prayed over him as youth leaders that he would see God's purpose in his going back. His backup plan was, hey, a little extra money won't hurt. My kids need some money right now. So if I make some extra money, I can help them out. But that's not the big reason why it's not worth going back to work for, right? He gets there, and when he's in the locker room getting ready, one of the men at work goes, what are you doing back here? It has not been the same since you've left. There is a spiritual sense that's been missing since you've been gone. Mike came back to us and he goes, you know what you prayed? All those years, I never knew it. I was a chaplain at work just by showing up with the love of God in my life. I had a purpose I never even knew about. I wish I would have known it earlier. I wouldn't have hated some of those days so much. You understand, this transformation will be contagious. That's what God wants to do. He doesn't want us to hold it in, do our own thing, periscope down, live in our bubble. We're here for each other. He goes on to say, rejoice in our confident hope and be patient in your trouble and keep on praying. You see, when God's people are in need, and this is going to be our key verse for today, be ready to help them. Always be eager to practice hospitality. The need to welcome each other, to be looking out for each other's needs. Well, one of the places we had a chance to do that, tied into Birmingham, is that we just sent our student mission trip down to Birmingham, and I'm going to invite my wife, Rennie, to come up, who was on that trip with our students, to share about it. What an incredible opportunity to go to the place that was torn apart by racial strife, that's been passed down by grandparents to their grandchildren because they remember it firsthand. It has not gone away. And by the way, Martin Luther King said that one of the worst places he ever visited for racism in the world was Chicago. He commented about the treatment right here. The pain sometimes doesn't get talked about because it's passed on, it's real. So, Rennie, tell us a little bit about Birmingham.
Well, first of all, I think one of the things that I would love to share is I had a dream. Turn to the person right next to you and just talk for just a second about what's a dream that you have. What's a dream that you would love to see God do in your life? Go ahead and turn to the person next to you. One of my dreams in working here at the Orchard with the youth ministry here has been that we would be able to teach our students not to wait till they're adults to have a legacy, but instead that while they're still junior high and high school students, they can begin that legacy now. One of the ways that we have done that is by working with Miss Catherine in our children's ministry and giving our students an opportunity to actually become small group apprentices with other adults to learn and to come alongside with them of what is it to be a leader and what is it to come alongside children who we may have had an influence over before, but how can we now make a bigger impact on their lives? And as a result, legacies are being left in these children's lives. As I go in and I'm able to see them in action with the little children and with other adults, I am telling you right now, lives are coming alive, right? They're coming alive because of the legacies that are being left behind and God transforming a life inside. Well, in the midst of that, we decided, well, that is great. But we have this group of students who are really interested in social justice. And we're trying to rack our brains. What would that mean? What would that mean? But they have come up with creative ideas and ways of serving right here in our community by working at food pantries, by ringing bells for the Salvation Army, by taking one person at a time who has a need with painting or perhaps just babysitting, but really coming alongside and saying, you know what? I could leave a legacy now. Well, in the midst of that, we think, that's great. We love it in our church. We love it in our own communities and in our schools. But what would happen if we begin to give our students an opportunity? This is my dream. If we begin to give our students an opportunity to really reach out far beyond our own community. Well, we got that opportunity. Five of us youth leaders got the opportunity of taking a group of 11 students with us to Birmingham, Alabama. And the real dream for me is Tracy Hips. He is from Birmingham, worked in the inner city of Chicago. I got to know him there along with my husband, Dave. And together we built this relationship and I began to hear his heart for his home, Birmingham, Alabama. And so God gave him an opportunity here into Chicago to get his feet wet, to learn a little bit more about what it would be if God could take his life and use it for the sake of change in Birmingham. Well, my dream then is to help him be successful. And so in the midst of that, 5 years ago, I got to take a team of students there in Birmingham, and it changed my life. It changed the lives of our students, and it changed the lives of the people there in Birmingham. And in the midst of that, coming here to the Orchard, Jess Sennett and I had this dream about what would it be to take our students someplace else, and Birmingham was the place. Another dream I had was with Laura Wampuck, and you'll see some pictures of her, a young gal who raised my youth ministry over in Sugar Grove, and as a result of her growing up in Christ, she then became a youth pastor in Neighborhood Alliance Church in Florida. And as a result of that, we got the opportunity to work together. We met each other in Birmingham, Alabama, after dreaming and working hard and long with Jess, and helping the opportunity for our students to get to know another youth ministry who also is passionate about reaching their community, but also leaving a legacy for the world behind. Well, what an opportunity it was. And we had the goofiest of times, from the wrong directions to getting the wrong places to spending hours upon hours getting candy ahead of time. You know what that's like to make that stop, that five-minute stop that turns into 15 minutes. But in the midst of that, God was building our relationships with one another and beginning to prepare our hearts for reaching the city of Birmingham. When we got to Birmingham, God began to work on us to say, okay, God, what is it that you want us to do? Here we are. We're ready to be used by you. We stayed in a community in the upper class part of Birmingham, Alabama, and we got to stay on church floor, which was extremely uncomfortable, but really fun. We got to play games with each other, tease each other. You'll see lots of pictures of the kids goofing off with each other, making duct tape, hot pink duct tape shoes and such, rubbing each other's backs, but also playing games in the gym, rubbing shoulders with the other youth ministry that God provided for us to rub shoulders with. And all along, dreams were beginning to be made. As students, we're rubbing shoulders with other students, not just our own, but really coming alongside the Church of Orlando and helping them to be successful in their journey. Not only that, but you'll see pictures of our youth leaders coming alongside students, where it didn't make any difference our age, but a JB and a Glenn working together in the kitchen making macaroni and cheese, which is exactly what JB had dreamed of all week. What if I got to make macaroni and cheese? And what a dream come true that Glenn would come alongside of him and help him to feed all this group of people. And we even had guests that night with macaroni and cheese. What a great event. And going shopping for the food and making sure that we were making other people successful as we were working alongside of each other. Coming up with creative ideas of how can you make macaroni and cheese a different way since we didn't have all the ingredients that we had hoped to have. All kinds of different dreams coming true for students being able to cook, and even when the concoction was the wildest of wild. But in the midst of that, God gave us the opportunity to not only stay in the upper class community and to pray for that community, but then every day culture shock would hit us as we would go into the city of Birmingham. Students, you'll remember how we were torn in our hearts to come back and see that we were living in poverty day in and day out, and yet we could come back home and be well fed, cared for, goofing off in a nice gym, having hot showers, and all the while the people that we had been spending our time with were in major suffering and poverty. It was huge on us. And many days, emotional tears would run, not only just from the girls, but also from young men who said, man, this is more than I can handle, but it's real. And it's what our world is really like. We live on one side and have no clue what's going on the other side. In the midst of that, God would give us opportunities of not only just goofing off, but we got opportunities in four quadrants of a 5-mile radius that Tracy and his team in Birmingham, Alabama, Mission Birmingham, have been asking God, please God, if we could just set the pace in this 5-mile radius, not only through your heart, but through hands-on work. If we could help rehab all of these houses, if God would give us the money and we could take care of children while their parents were working, if God would give us the opportunity to help tutor students, God, what could happen to the whole city of Birmingham if we could just do it in 1 5-mile radius as a picture image? And you know what? A dream is coming true for Birmingham. The mayor, the presidents of companies are coming alongside Mission Birmingham with Tracy Hips and saying, you know what, we want to be a part of this. We see what you're doing, and lives are changing, and we want to help them get jobs, and we want to help them live in nice homes and train and equip them, and we want to take care of their children so that their children have a hope of a future. And in the midst of that, our students got hands-on with students, life-changing experience of helping tutor them through computers or coming alongside of them for math. You'll see some of those pictures of the students coming alongside. Our leaders coming alongside other children, helping them be successful in the way that they were eating and manners, all the way from helping them to learn about Jesus. We did things like daycare. You know, the menial task, and you'll see Sabrina holding a little baby that her heart just connected with immediately, and that little one just kept clinging on to her. You'll see pictures of students weeping over the fact that, you know what? I had no idea that God was going to use them in my life. You see, we went with 11 students and 5 adults saying, you know what? We're going to help change the city of Birmingham, Alabama, not just from the wealthy end, but from the poverty-stricken end. Not just from the poverty-stricken end, but going back to the wealth. And in the midst of that, we come back as a team who have been truly changed by the city of Birmingham. It's amazing how God does that. I don't know what your legacy is. I don't know what your dreams are. But I tell you, when God begins to use you outside of your comfort zone, and I would say many of us were outside of our comfort zone, I am just so thankful that there was a day where we actually had work projects. Like you'll see the housing that we did with Habitat for Humanity. I mean, it was hot, very hot. We had asthma attacks going on. We had heat strokes going on. But those kids would not stop. Now, parents, don't freak out. Okay? We cared for your children. But amazingly, they were so passionate about the fact that, no, we want to help these people be successful. No, we want to help do this project. And there was another team of us over in an academy that's built for students who wouldn't necessarily get Christian opportunity of education. And there is a place in right downtown Birmingham, very poor section of the area. Oftentimes, murders. We were safe, once again. But the reality of life was setting on around us. And in the midst of that, they asked us to help set up classrooms. So we did that. We rearranged chairs. We got rid of things for them. We helped them to make decisions about what to put where. Students helping with that, but also out in the heat of the day, our leaders and our students were working so hard to help make this place beautiful where the weeds had overgrown. And it was tough work weeding. These weeds had long roots, right? And we saw kids coming up, I can't get it. Well, come on, let's do it together. And we have pictures of those of students working together. But you know what? Had we not had that work project, our emotions would have run wild with us. Because you see, when you're dealing with relationships, it's not so easy to say goodbye. And when it becomes easy to say goodbye, I have a hesitancy to say, did we make an impact? Do you care about the people that are around you? Are you willing to leave a legacy on somebody's life, no matter how long, how different we are, what the economic differences are? Are we willing to make an impact? And you know what? Our students made such an impact, but those children made a huge impact on us. The leaders there made a huge impact. The Orlando team touched our students' lives, and it gave us a picture that not only is ministry wild here at the Orchard and in our community of Aurora and Batavia and Yorkville and Oswego and Montgomery and Sugar Grove, but you know what? Our students are ready to reach the world for Jesus Christ. Thank you so much. Thank you for your legacy of prayer for us. Thank you that you sent us out from here with your financial gifts. Thank you for the impact that you're making on students as they're working alongside of you in the different ministries here. Perhaps even in your job locations and you hire one of them as an intern. Thank you for the legacy that you're leaving for them. Thank you for the impact that you're making for the sake of the world.
So good. We have the most incredible students here at the Orchard. I think we have about 50 students now plugged into this ministry, many of which have no connections to any families in the church, who have found us to find a place to take that journey with Jesus. Now, students aren't the only ones who go on mission trips here to get the Periscope up out of the bubble. Students go on mission trips. Matt's here. Stand up, Matt, because you guys are going to be praying for Matt as he leads a team, including of 10. All right? And when you pray for him, make sure there's two N's and two T's in his name, not like this, okay? But they're going to El Salvador, and they'll be back the day before the baptism. So you'll be able to interview him at the baptism, see how it went. We're sending out 10 adults to build a medical clinic down in El Salvador. And we just have a mission's heart of touching lives locally and globally, right? Starting with each other right here in this room and beyond. Well, in that journey, here's see a need, meet a need. Have you been living more like an ostrich or a hawk? Very different life perspectives. When you look at a transformed life with Jesus, in Romans 12, it says, don't be an ostrich. Don't bury your head. Be a hawk. You literally are searching for an opportunity to meet someone else's need. No, wait a minute. You're going, I'm overwhelmed with my own life. The easiest way to overcome the overwhelming in your own life is to come along somebody else. You guys, I'm just going to be really honest with you. There's a lot of pain in our lives. Every week, Rennie and I deal with tons of pain in people's lives, including our own. We live this. We don't have a plastic Jesus. This is real stuff. We coach and we care for people who don't have anyone else to coach and care for them in ministry. We had a young couple this last week move to a brand new ministry. Their house has been on the market for 2 months. No one's even looked at it. Chicago house. They're now on the East Coast. She's 4 months pregnant, and she loses the baby the third weekend. Her family's overseas because she's an international. And I happened to call them because God put them on my heart. Why they're, guess what? They're heading to the hospital, and I call them on my cell phone because God had prompted me to think about them. When God gives me a name, you guys, I go after that name. I make a phone call. I do an instant text message. I instant message him. I do some way to connect because I know when we went through our darkest times, some of you don't know all the pain that our daughter went through, but she had 8 years of incredible pain, including being kidnapped and missing, and we actually thought she was dead. So to have her back and be in a healing part is a big deal to us. We went through that time and not knowing what to deal with that, and there were just moments that you'd be up at 2 o'clock in the morning just weeping by yourself going, how alone can you be? It's how alone Christina felt being all alone out in the East Coast, losing this child after dreaming to be pregnant for a long time. And the phone would ring or my computer would beep. And I'd go over and a friend of mine had been woken up to pray for me and was typing a prayer at that moment. What if he would have gone, oh, just indigestion? You see, you don't have no idea what it means when somebody comes alongside of you. Now, we've lost a child. We lost our first child midway through a pregnancy. Many of us have. Nobody ever talks about it because pregnancy is a joyful thing. But we don't know how frequent that is. But when you've gone through it, it's lonely. It's painful. It isolates you. What if we don't put our periscopes up? What if we don't live transformed? What if we don't let the love of God have us look for each other's needs? Wow, then the whole thing doesn't work. It doesn't work. We're isolated with our pain. I just want you to know, I know that's what it's like to suffer through persecution. We have friends who, being in South Africa doing ministry. One of our friends, dad was brought as a slave from India, his grandfather rather, and he had lived in the family of slaves to work in the gold mines where they pile it up where the rich houses are on this side and the poor people are over there, and then the whole apartheid thing happens. And you know, they had a build. It's only, 14 years ago that some of this stuff became fully realized. And yet children don't even know about it in the rich homes because they don't talk about it. They had to build a museum and take the kids because it was never a part of their life to notice somebody else's pain. It was unbelievable to have a gated community and an AIDS clinic across the street from each other with people living in lean-tos that was going to have to get moved because another gated community wanted to take their land. So wealthy homes, and you've got a fence, and then you've got ultimate poverty, and it's like we don't see it because we got our periscopes down. You guys, it's so easy to live that way, but it's not the right way to live. It's not the right way. Well, because of that, I'm going to invite you to see a need and meet a need. To ask God, what portion of needs that I see are mine? Now, that doesn't mean you need to meet all of every need you see. This is not like, boom, thanks for throwing all that on me, Dave. You know, I get 37 pictures of starving infants every week in the mail. Do I have to feed them all? No. We all do a small part of the needs God gives us so that together we meet those needs. They're not your need. They're our need. And God sometimes gives you needs so you can realize his grace comes from each other. Man, we don't like to receive, do we? But God puts us in those positions. Why? Because that's part of how a transformed community lives. It's not just about us. So because of that, going back to Romans 12, thinking through this legacy, look at this. Bless those who persecute you. Don't curse them. Pray that God will bless them. When does that normally come up in our experience? Someone makes life miserable for you and you ask God to bless them? He goes, that's what my transformation will do for you. He goes on to say, be happy with those who are happy and weep with those who weep. We have a spiritual gift sometimes of, you know, weeping with those who are happy and being happy with those who are weeping. Stop being so happy. My life's miserable. That's not going to do it. Sometimes we have to learn how to enjoy other people's joy and share other people's pain. That's a simple part of being transformed, leading each other in a growing relationship with Jesus here at the Orchard. Celebrate each other's joys. Weep with each other's pain. Live in harmony with each other. Don't be too proud to enjoy the company of people just like us. Avoid, isn't that funny? That's in the Bible. Don't be afraid. Don't try to associate with people that make you look better than you are. And don't think you know it all. I think that's funny that God has to tell us that with our little brains and his big, you know, capacities. Like, you don't know it all. Never pay back evil with more evil. Do things in such a way that everyone can see you are honorable. As far as it depends on you, live at peace with all men. Wow, is that a hard one? But is that a great promise? Do you know what that means? There are some people who are not going to like you because of what you value, what you believe. And you can be right and hated. You can be right and persecuted. You can love someone and be hated back, and you are not responsible for their return, but you're always responsible for what you give. You see, that's transformation. You know what I love, my promise of God? Why we are yet sinners, separated, angry, departed from God, he died for us. You see where we get? We start to understand transformation because it's what God did for us, and we didn't deserve any of it. He did it because he wanted to show us what transforming love looks like. Things like, dear friends, never take revenge. Leave that to the righteous anger of God. For the scriptures say, I will take revenge. I will pay them back, says the Lord. Instead, if your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they're thirsty, give them something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on their head. So, don't let evil conquer you, but conquer evil by doing good. When you've suffered great pain at the hand of somebody else, what would God's response be, and is God big enough to care for that? Take a look at this clip of the life of Rosa Parks.
Since you're new and don't have any friends, I'll be your best friend. Miss White, Miss Barton, and all the teachers are from the North. They seem strict.
They are. There's something called Quaker. It's a religion that believes all people are the same. It should be treated right.
That's a good religion.
My mother thinks Miss White is a saint for putting up with what she does to keep school open.
Like what?
Lots of people don't want her teaching colored girls. Even burnt school twice to try to stop her. But each time, Miss White and other teachers just build it back up and keep on teaching.
Rowena, did you not do well on your test?
I never do well, Miss Barton. I'm too stupid.
Rowena, you are not stupid.
I don't know why we're bothering with all this reading and arithmetic when all we're going to end up doing for jobs is washing somebody's clothes and wiping their baby's snotty noses.
Does anybody want to answer Rowena's question?
We bother so we can be equal to everybody else.
We're not equal to everybody else. We're not equal to white folks.
I was raised to believe if I put my mind to it, I could do whatever I want in this world. Alice had no one's better than me. No man, no woman, black or white. No one.
If white folks say...
No one. A person take everything from you, even your life, but they can't take your identity. Can't nobody take that from you but you. That's what my grandpappy told me, and I believe him.
If you learn nothing else at Mrs. White's school, may the blessed Lord help you remember what Rosa just taught you.
You know, the context of being able to love the person that's harmed you, love the one who's harmed your child, and live not giving people back what you believe they deserve, but rather what God's given you, such undeserved grace, has a funny context because you see, Romans 12, verse 1 starts this way. Therefore, by the mercies of God. And the therefore, whenever there's a therefore in the Bible, you have to ask yourself what it's there for. Because it's always saying what's gone before is the foundation to this truth. You guys, Romans 12 is at the end of 11 chapters of God telling us how incredibly obsessive he is about loving us and yet his justice for our sin. And he says, I am the only answer for the sin you've committed. And I am the person that will get inside of you and be your sufficiency and transform you because you simply can't do it. Chapter 1 to 11 is you rely on God as your only hope. You see him as big as he says he is, or you don't have a chance. Then we hit chapter 12, which says, if you hang out with me, you'll become like me. And he's got promises like this. Don't copy the behavior and customs of those around you, but let God transform you. Who does the transforming? You see, there's something amazing about being in the community of God's people when he transforms us into a new person by changing, starting with the way you even think. Out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. Our evil actions come because we don't have right thinking and a right heart and believe that God is sufficient enough to give us the resources to help each other or to see that we could actually take on someone else's need because ours is overwhelming us because we make it all about us. He goes, if I did that, you guys would have no hope. Right? That's what worship is giving God, to God the worship and glory he deserves. So, what's the source? You got to go back to the last couple of verses of chapter 11 to see what's going to allow us to get our periscopes up out of our bubbles to be here for each other. Oh, the depth of the riches and the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable his judgments and his paths beyond tracing out. Who has known the mind of the Lord and who has counseled him? For from him, through him, and to him, all things belong. To him alone be all the glory forever. Amen. See, you can live a legacy and have a tombstone like Martin Luther King. You can put your focus up, and I'd love to have you turn to your service guide and grab the four questions I've left for you this week, and I'd love for you to email me what you think God's prompting you as your legacy. Here are those questions, because I'd like to know what your legacy looks like. First question, what does it mean for me to leave a legacy? Every one of you needs to ask that question. Look at the person next to you. Look them in the eye. Go ahead and wonder for a moment, do they know their legacy? Do they know what it's going to take to align to be what God wants us to do? And then ask the question. Look at that third question. Oops, sorry. Have I asked God to lead me into the legacy he has for me? Don't come up with your legacy alone. Experiencing things like Birmingham, experiencing things like El Salvador, experiencing things like caring for a neighbor. And then ask the question, does my legacy line up with Romans 12? Am I simply caring for people the way God invited me to do, the way he cares for me? So, you know, this morning, we get to end with a big God song about the whole fact that the legacy we have is only because he's already given it to us. You guys, we get to rely on what he's already done for us to do this for each other. Let's not hold it back. Enjoy this as we worship.